In the interview with Paul Schrader on Criterion, the main thing he's talking about is that he was like, he saw the movie and was like, oh, this is a fun movie. I like this movie. And then was surprised by how many people he knew that hated the movie, had like strong feelings of hate towards the movie and towards Lena Dunham. She's like, he's like, oh, that's interesting. And so he was like thinking about why that might be. And so the 9-minute video is basically him saying his theory of why he thinks the people that hate it, why they hate it.
I'm sure we'll get more into that.
Yeah, we can get into that.
I definitely have a range of thoughts about this. Mm-hmm. But for right now, welcome to Black Guys on White Movies. I am Aaron Covington.
Mm-hmm. And I am Amana Doomer.
And I am their white friend, Brandon Gardner.
And this week, we are looking at Lena Dunham's debut, as mentioned, Tiny Furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull up the, I should have had it up, but let me pull up the IMDb
synopsis. Maybe we guess, try to guess what it is.
It's pretty straightforward. About a recent college grad who returns home while she tries to figure out what to do with her life.
Yeah.
Usually the synopses, the log lines have a little bit more, generate a little more discussion. This one
was right on the only thing I was thinking was, I think that's a very accurate log line. I think like the log line that makes the most sense. It doesn't capture the feel sort of the movie. Like the movie's got a lot of quirkiness and a lot of, one of the things I'm sure we'll talk about is Lena Dunham's character, very self-involved. They describe her as self-involved, very privileged. That's a big part of the movie.
Right.
And so that's not really in the description, but I also, understand, can't squeeze everything in there.
Right. Yeah. They had put like a, even if a signifier, say, an upper middle class, a Manhattanite, recent grad, something that just said like this is where she's from, would have done a lot to.
Yes,
because it, of like what kind of people you're going to encounter in this movie,
and the type of struggle that she's having, which is more existential than it is pragmatic.
Right.
Yeah.
Like there are people who graduate and they're like, shit, I need money for these things, these concrete things, these needs.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
She doesn't have to worry about any of her basic needs.
Yeah. No. It's essentially that log line I just now realized could apply to The Graduate. And I didn't make the comparison to that movie, but I feel like, it's just a college grad who's trying to figure out what to do with their life. So I feel like it's unlike The Graduate in the same way that you all have described, just that it's quirky. It's set in a specific part of like Manhattan where these people are from.
Although now that you mentioned, The Graduate definitely also about a like upper middle class privileged young man just graduated from college. So that's a guy. It's also the movie Kicking and Screaming. Do you ever see that? That's a similar.
I haven't seen that.
Could have the same synopsis of someone who just recently graduated, sort of struggling to figure out what they want to do with their life.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, see, Kicking and Screaming, I don't know if I had seen that, but I always get it confused with the Will Ferrell.
Yes, very different from like the Will Ferrell as a soccer coach for kids.
People are like, have you seen Kicking and Screaming? I'm like, man, classic Will Ferrell. Like,
not that one.
Like, that movie was hilarious. So, like, it was not funny like that.
Yeah. Mike Ditka. That's a funny movie. Yeah. He's in it. I do the same thing. But then they go Criterion Collection. And I go, the Will Ferrell movie's in the Criterion Collection? That's really dope. I love that.
Good for Criterion Collection being expanding, their tastes.
Exactly.
Black movie of the week before we get going.
Yeah, I'm curious about this.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about somebody who was trying to figure out direction in life.
Mm-hmm.
I went with more of a tearjerker, but it's just at the end. It's good. It's pretty light until then. Pretty slice of life like this is. I went with Fruitvale Station by my pal Ryan Coogler.
Oh yeah.
for the first hour of the movie, you're kind of just hanging with this guy, and he has to, you know, his, obviously his, like you were saying, the things he's juggling are like, he has a kid, he lost his job, he's selling some weed on the side, you know, trying to hustle in that way. He's living at home, or, you know what, no, he's living with his girl, but.
Times are tough, yeah.
Times are tough. And his interaction is mostly with his family in the movie, and he goes from this to this, and few things happen. And then at the end, of course, it becomes a much different, you know, story. Very sad at the end, but the kind of pace and the slice of life up until then, I think, was somewhat similar enough. There's some other good indie movies, like Medicine for Melancholy or Moonlight even, but I felt there was so much emphasis on the romance in those. And this, she dealt with the guys, but they weren't really, that's not really, it was more of a her singular journey.
Right.
And people kind of bounced off of her rather than what she, you know, we'll get into what I think about her and connecting with people, but she wasn't really trying to. And Fruitvale, he was and was connected with people, but it was really solo on his journey and him making this turn in his life before the tragic events took over, even though, you know, he had his girl and that was a nice, really nice relationship too. But, you know, it was so focused on him and what happens to him.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a good rec.
That's a really fun rec.
Well, you know, the larger point, and there are other movies, of course, but as just, you know, minorities get to make movies like this less, you know?
Yes.
Right.
So this is much, of course, it's a smaller pool to pull from, but it's even smaller than like if it was a black action movie or even a studio movie or a bigger comedy. Like, rarely are we afforded the opportunity to make a mumblecore type of coming of age movie and have it like, you know, get festival love and you know, blow up a career like this did for Lena, right?
The closest I can think of is Awkward Black Girl going into Insecure. And with a web series, definitely able to do it with a smaller budget, but similar sort of like that was her springboard. And sort of a somewhat similar, like the character's a little older, but still like character in her 20s trying to figure out her life.
Yeah.
And they have the commonality, obviously, of HBO jumping in and being like, I want to give you a show.
It's interesting because I'm sure if we compared like the audience from Tiny Furniture with the online audience,
right?
Misadventures of Black, the Awkward Black Girl, and the other web series that Issa had created, it's like, of course, Issa had a show, you know?
Right.
But with Lena Dunham, she kind of followed an old pipeline. It's like you do the indie. This is a pipeline.
Right. From South by. Yeah.
Maybe it
goes back to the 70s in a sense of making an indie, but definitely the 90s where it's like, you got in the festivals. Now people are looking at you. Right. You got the co-sign from Judd Apatow. Kind of really a more traditional route.
For sure.
Yeah. And just, I feel like, I don't know the behind the scenes story of how this led to Girls, but I kind of know about the Insecure thing and just the amount that Issa was in development trying to make that thing. I can't imagine it took Girls that long to be like, okay, finally, like you get the opportunity to be from Tiny Furniture to Girls as opposed to Awkward Black Girl to Insecure.
Totally. Just looking at it, this movie was 2010, which I thought it was earlier. Girls was 2012.
Right. Yeah.
That's a quick turnaround.
Well, there's an anecdote that I'm pretty sure is true. It's like it's something people share online a lot, hating on Lena Dunham, but that Lena Dunham's pitch for Girls was like on one piece of paper. It was like a one paragraph pitch.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that the one thing I say is like when I watch this though, I also could be like, I could get where an HBO exec is like, oh, it's like Tiny Furniture, but it's a show. It's about like young women just out of college. It's these kind of characters where you wouldn't need as an, like when you've got a feature, you don't need as an elaborate pitch.
Yeah.
Like I think I'd heard that. I definitely had heard that before I saw the movie. And after seeing the movie, it was like, oh, I get why they gave her a movie or a television show. It makes sense to me.
Yeah. I see that too as like, yes, you're right. This is a sample of what I can do. I think that Judd Apatow cosine really probably
took it the furthest
it could go. Because if it's just a one page pitch and a movie that didn't do incredible at the box office, I just don't see how it happened that smoothly.
I was telling you before on Criterion, they have this interview with Paul Schrader, the screenwriter and director, who is talking about Tiny Furniture. And he starts by just saying that he saw the movie and he liked it. He thought it was a pretty good movie. And he was sort of surprised when people he knew had really strong negative opinions about it. Mm-hmm. And he was thinking about it. And what he was saying was that he thinks it's the kind of movie people watch and think, why did success happen to her and not to me? Because it's this mumblecore type movie, low budget mumblecore. And there's thousands of those, especially like around 2010. Mm-hmm. And so there's this resentment that like her movie made it and other people's movies didn't. And this idea that like her parents helped finance it, I guess it was 65 grand. And she got that money from her parents to self-finance. Mm. Which definitely not everybody can do. Mm-hmm. But Paul Schrader also just was like, I think the reason why this movie stood out is, in his opinion, most mumblecore movies are sort of improvisational and sort of sloppy. He's like, this felt tightly scripted to me. There was a story.
Yeah.
And he's like, compositionally, as far as the cinematography, there was a lot of thought put into the shots. Mm-hmm. Which was also something that with mumblecore, it also often felt like they just set up a camera somewhere without a lot of thought to the composition. He's like, there's a reason why this movie did well and these other movies didn't.
Well, let's get into you guys's your thoughts, general thoughts, feeling on the movie.
So my general thoughts were and are that
were and are
it's staying consistent.
Yeah, it's staying the same. As I was watching it, it's so funny to follow up Terminator 2 with this movie.
Yes,
because as I was watching Terminator 2, I couldn't stop watching it, and it's unfair to compare it, but we might as well. This movie, I felt like if I paused it, I would never come back to it. Like there was nothing pulling me back to it other than I got to finish this in order to talk about it with you guys. So I felt that way all the way through. I did, similar to Paul Schrader, I did enjoy. I was like, oh yeah, these shots are interesting and composed interestingly. And like the dialogue feels unique. But up until probably the third act, There was nothing like telling me to keep watching this thing. And then towards the end, when the conflict was happening, and it happened for a brief little bit, I was like, okay, I'm interested in this. And then it's like dissipates. But I'll tell you what, I'm a sucker for when people can stick the landing. And I felt like this movie to me stuck the landing. And I was like, okay. I like the
end.
Can
you say more about that? What was it about the ending that you felt like, oh, that they stuck the landing, that this is satisfying?
I feel like this movie was nonstop talking. And then at the end,
why are they talking so much?
Talking. Somebody definitely, a weapon. Definitely a lot of talking.
I want to see some kung fu or bullets flying.
Yeah.
Almost no kung fu.
No time travelers, no like fighting on the LA River, none of that.
No liquid metal.
It was nonstop talking. And then I feel like at the end, there was like a moment of quiet. That kind of resonated.
The scene with her and her mom.
With her mom, yeah, towards the end, where she's like in the bed with her mom, and her mom wants her to put the noisy alarm clock in the other room.
Right.
And then she's just like, yeah, can you hear it less? And then it stops, and I go, ooh, okay. What this did is made me go, oh, finally a moment to breathe and think about what I just saw. And so that's what I liked about it.
Here's a question for you. That ticking the alarm clock and Lena Dunham's character, Aura, moving it away, being like, yeah. Can you hear it now? I assume that's a metaphor. That was my thought. Like this idea, right? Like this ticking clock, like the ticking clock of her life. She's out of college, like, you know, life's going by and it seems like she's not doing what she needs to be doing. Mm-hmm. But I also was like, well, is it just don't listen to the ticking? Is it just sort of like live your life and be present and
right.
don't focus on the clock ticking?
Yeah.
Maybe that's a message like that. I wasn't sure. I was like, I know this is a metaphor, but I don't know how to interpret it.
I didn't even think about it. I was just like, another thing for her to half-ass.
Right. Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Is this far enough? Yeah, that's interesting for her too, to be like, is this far enough? It's far enough, right? Yeah.
Deeper too, but I think I kept the movie kind of surface level in my head. What I thought, you know, it is a peek into another world for sure. And I thought that, I found that interesting. And I watched it like the opposite of how we watch like T2 or like big action movies. It's like, how's she going to get out of this? But I'm like, how's she going to dig in deeper? Mm. Maybe that's a little bit watching a train wreck vibes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's not what she was going for. And I don't think that's not what Girls is going for too. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I think it was pretty self-aware. Mm-hmm. You know, or if it wasn't at times, it felt like it. You know, I don't think there was anything and I think this is maybe what people can latch on to, besides the fact that it's really for a very specific audience. So I'm an interloper. I'm complete and an outsider who's like, is there a good story here? Are the characters interesting? This doesn't speak to me or my existence. Mm. But the people it does speak to, I think it yells at, right? They're like, yes, my sister is annoying, my mom. Or even if they're kind of on the other side, they're like, yeah, my sister's just like that. So freaking selfish. And this movie never tried to make her seem like a hero. It never said like, this is the way to be. It was always like, look at how she's screwing over everybody. You know? So I guess I enjoyed it in that sense as almost like a tragedy.
Right.
Yeah. Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah. For me, it had a similar issue that I had with Girls, where I find the protagonist to be very unappealing and unlikable. This very self-involved, selfish, like baby adult. Mm-hmm. But I think like you were both saying, the it's self-aware enough that I'm like, I do think you're in on it. Like, I think you, part of the enjoyment of the movie and oftentimes the humor of the movie is pointing at that self-involvement and immaturity. And so there was, I watched all of Girls and there was parts where I was like, man, I don't think I like the show. I don't think I'll watch it. And definitely episodes and even seasons where I was like, wow, I really like this show. Yeah. But a lot of it, I think, had to be me learning to enjoy it despite characters that are unappealing to me.
Here's my take on that. They say like, are the characters likable? And in this movie, I did ask myself, like, do I like anybody in this movie? Like, I guess I like her friend, the wild one.
Yeah.
Charlotte.
She was at least interesting, but also destructive.
Yeah. Also so destructive. But yeah. Here's my take on that in movies in general. I don't know if I care if the character does likable or unlikable things. It's do I like the actor as that character? You know what I mean?
Right.
I like the way these actors portray these characters. And maybe some of them were more like, this is actually who I am, than others. But I ended up appreciating the work like that Lena was doing on her character. It's like, do I like that character? No, I would not like that person.
Yeah.
But there are people that could play it where I couldn't watch it, you know? Even the mom, I was like, oh, I kind of like the mom. Later, I'm like, man, this mom is insufferable.
I was like, what?
That actress playing it is doing a great.
Who's Lena Dunham's real mom?
That's Lena Dunham's real mom.
And sister, played by a real sister.
Play by real sister.
That makes a lot of sense.
Which was actually one of the things I was like, you know what? That's interesting and sort of impressive is that Lena wrote those parts for her real family with the idea that they're not real actors.
Yeah.
But I'll write them something like they can deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting. The thing that you just said, Aaron, that was like, oh, you know what? That's a big part of it too, is with both this movie and Girls, it's so hard to separate Lena Dunham's character from her because it feels, is this autobiographical? It seems like more or less it is.
Right.
It's going back to her at her mom's real apartment with her real mom graduating from Oberlin, which she really had just graduated from.
Trying to be a filmmaker, which
exactly.
The film she did actually make.
So it's interesting where it's like, I find the character to be unlikable. It's being written and performed by someone who I'm like, I think that is you, but you must also have some self-awareness about yourself. Or maybe it isn't you exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky experience watching it to be like, cause like you said, like if you can, I think the idea of an actor who's playing a role someone else wrote and directed for them gives you a little separation from it.
Yeah, I agree. As I was watching this, I know about like how much people, how many negative feelings people have about the movie and like the, and Girls and Lena Dunham and this whole thing. And as I was watching, I was thinking about the good to gain from it. And I thought, if she's going to enter this kind of mumblecore subgenre where a bunch of people are probably making movies about like being, you know, she's at least authentic to her experience. Mm-hmm. And that was fascinating to me because it's so unlike my experience, that it was cool to watch it and go, okay. I can't think of a movie that's like this with these kinds of characters.
That makes me think of with a quick tangent to talk about Girls a little bit, although I think it's related to what Iman was saying about what is authentic to Lena Dunham's world. So Girls got a lot of press about how there was like no non-white characters in the show. And people are like, the show that's set in New York City. Yeah. And which is why she wrote that character for Donald Glover.
Right.
And that's one of those things where I'm curious what you both think, but to me it's like, well, I just want her to make the authentic version of her world rather than shoehorn in like characters of color that she won't even necessarily like know how to write to. And if they aren't part of the world she experiences, it's like, well, don't add that artificiality. Like to me, it's just like, if that limits the appeal of the show, well, you know, give money to Issa to make Insecure, or go give money to these other people that are showing their worlds.
Yeah.
Don't be like, well, let's shoehorn it into this thing that already exists.
Yeah, I think
is my take. Yeah,
that's something we talked about before, where it's like, give more creators opportunity. It shouldn't fall on Lena Dunham or any one artist to do all. Represent everybody, but it does fall on the studios. It does fall on the networks.
Totally.
With what they put out there.
Mm-hmm. Falls on the co-signers like Judd Apatow and those types of people.
Yeah. That's interesting. True. Right. It's like Judd. Yeah. What black filmmakers are you championing? Yeah.
I do wonder in her real life, she's in New York. Look, if this was in a lot of places in this country, no, barely any black people.
Right.
In New York, I feel like she doesn't have to date this Donald Glover black Republican character in this show, but somebody. She worked at that restaurant, a chef, somebody there was black. You know what I mean? Or Mexican or Puerto Rican.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Asian. She's not even like an Asian, or there's no diversity. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, and that is a little hard for me to believe on a base level. But I agree that I'm not watching her show to, understand a Black experience. And
no,
I don't, like you said, I wouldn't want to see like a Black character put in this world and that not be addressed or explored a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What they're sacrificing to exist in this world, or how they have to shift and mold to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, and this was my thing the whole movie. Everything is like, well, but that's how I felt the whole time. I'm like, benefit of the doubt, but also, mm-hmm. oh, she's like actually a pretty good storyteller. But what's the,
yeah,
everything was like, it was a push and pull where it's like, I do respect what she's done. And people are like, well, her parents gave her the money to make mm-hmm. a film. That is what you're supposed to do.
Yes, yes.
If you can. Everybody yeah. can.
Yeah.
But if I could, I'd have, yo, can I get 65 for a movie yeah. real quick if they had
it's
it?
It's also,
yeah.
I had the similar thought of like, there's a lot of kids whose parents could give them $65,000 for a movie.
Yes.
Who can't make something this good with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't care to make something.
Like $65,000 is a lot of money for your parents to be able to give you. But for a yeah. feature, it's a real accomplishment to be like, I made a feature for $65,000, even in 2010.
Mm-hmm. That's tough. It yeah. is tough.
Yeah, I agree. I think that maybe it's unfairly being put in the category with those mumblecore movies that are made for what, like $45 and a bag of chips. Like it's like, it's
no, this is not unfair. This is a mumblecore for sure.
I know, but to compare it to those other ones, it's like, it doesn't even.
Which other ones?
You know what I'm talking about. All those, I feel like a lot of those early mumblecore movies where it's like.
I feel like I'm not well-versed enough to.
Yeah, we need a list. We need a list.
Okay, I'll come up with a list.
Like I got to watch some early Duplass Brothers.
Yeah, I feel like they're made for anywhere between 10 to 100,000, anywhere in that range.
Right. Right.
I think it's even a higher range that's still mumblecore, you know?
Right.
But I think most of like the kind of more recognizable ones are probably in that range that I can't really even think of them, but just thinking about the genre, right?
Right. Right. Yeah, but I totally agree. If you have the money, give it. Like people's parents who can do that will do that for their kids. And that's not a good argument against it. Yeah, I agree. I kind of disagree a little bit with what we're talking about shoehorning people of color in. I do it. Shoehorn people of color into this world, into girls, into this. Like those people, give them checks. Like get them exposure. Let them have a chance. Like even not every actor, and also not every person of color needs to be in Girls or one of these kinds of movies and have to represent a deeper thing. That was the issue I had when casting. I was like, oh my God, this would just be a totally different movie if we have people of color in it. Cause it can't just be a movie about a privileged kid finishing college. All these actors have like such gravitas and like charisma and personality that it can't just be like,
I mean, I guess I'm saying like at like the house party, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's probably mm-hmm. one Black girl there, or one Black dude, like Amon is there, you know,
because
he's friends with one of the white dudes, right? Or at the high school party, the high school has one or two Black kids.
They should
be at the high school at the party at the house. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
small stuff like that, and sometimes that's tokenism a little bit. I don't know if there's a perfect answer, but the better thing is like. Oh yeah, Girls, and we had Insecure. You know what I mean? That does feel mm-hmm. like, in some ways, a trade off. And not that I'm not comparing those shows. Just the fact that like we had white led, and we have a Black led show, and you know, now we need shows with other leads. I guess I want to see in a more different worlds too. Also, yeah, is it not? An Asian kid at the party. Does she not, you mm-hmm. know what I mean?
But I think that is part of possibly the point you get from it. You're like, I think you can watch it and be like, oh shit, she has no friends that aren't white. All right. Your friends that's are white.
How myopic her life is and her experience.
And that can be your take from it. It's like, oh shit, it's like all the guys she's interested in, all her friends, they're all white. Because I do think we'll go, like, I think it makes sense to have in your mind, it's like, well, these black actors aren't getting a chance at these roles. But the opposite is almost like when you see like a political ad for like a white politician.
Right.
And the ad is like them hanging out and there's like one of every type of person at their barbecue. And you're like, that's not what their barbecue was like. You're giving a false representation of yourself.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like almost like propaganda. Like if I think in a way, if Lena Dunham had like, let's say cast the like Alex Karpovsky character, the guy who was the filmmaker she sort of had a crush on.
Right.
If she had cast him as a black actor, it really would change my perception of her character. And I think would probably make her seem better, or like this thing of like, oh, interesting, she's not just her circle isn't so narrow. But I think part of the point of the movie is, oh no, her circle is pretty narrow.
So I guess I see the different sides personally. I don't know that I have answer, you know, have the answer other than to the networks.
Yeah, exactly.
Not to her specifically, but to the networks to.
Because HBO can look at their programming, and be like, and oh, big, all these shows,
You have the big tentpole shows. It's like, okay, Westworld, which was pretty diverse. Like, yeah, that's got to be diverse, and it's like Future World. Like, why wouldn't you know? And like and then it's hard when they do like the Game of Thrones and stuff. And I don't watch those. It's not a genre that I really get into. But with those, I'm like. Yeah, I don't know what the book said, but this is HBO tentpole show. It should have a little diversity. And it's a fantasy world, you know, so.
Yeah, this is not an auteur, like, doing something semi-autobiographical. It's just, like, made-up fantasy world with dragons.
Right. let's talk through the movie a little bit. I took some notes. So, 4 minutes in, first bit of nudity. That's when we see some butt.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
a trademark, a Dunham trademark from girls,
And that's definitely one of the things that makes her stand out. Is she in her way, she tries to be honest about sexuality, but just depicting it a lot of times, it's like, I mean, most movies aren't going to go there, or like, and it's another thing if you use it like, as, you know, you exploit it a little bit, or it's like really sexy. I wrote a note here that this is like. The most non-sexy, sexy movie. Like, it's about a lot of sex, but it's so non-sexy.
The big sex scene is not sexy.
It's not sexy.
It's, if anything, funny or sad, depending on how you're watching it,
For how much this movie was about sex, it was extremely unsexy. And I think that, as far as her storytelling and her persona, is like, that's kind of a big deal. Most people inject some sexiness into it, and she was like, nope.
And part of it too is her sort of body type is not shown naked a lot. So that's another thing where it's like, that's because as much as she comes from this privileged background, her parents gave her some money. It's also as the writer director casting herself, she's not like a type that's well represented.
He almost has to do it herself.
That's what when we get into the casting, that's what made the casting so hard. Is
the casting was fun. I had to just divorce.
To me, it was like almost impossible.
I had to divorce myself a little bit and just go. I did go in another direction. And all her interactions, like, it was tough to pin down. Like, she's extremely needy, the character. She's so needy. But also everyone is neglecting her or pushing her to the side. But she also rejects everyone. Any chance that she gets, despite being very openly needy. And then when somebody does like her, she hates them, like her friend Charlotte here. But that's who she ends up bonding with the most.
Right.
I think partially because that was the only person who was like actively trying to hang out with her, that she didn't have something she could disappoint her with. She didn't give her anything that would give her power. Like her friend from college was like, oh, where you? I need to expect something from you. We're going to move in together. And she just, anytime somebody expected something from her, it was a wrap. It was not going to happen.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, like that the guy she likes, the chef,
yeah,
is just this asshole. He's like treats her so bad.
That's a complete F boy. He's like, yeah, my girl. But he was already cheating on her with somebody else. And
yeah.
It was like, bro, what is your life? It's just whatever, man.
Yeah, and her ex-boyfriend before left her to do like some kind of farming community. Some
sort of organic farming community or something, yeah.
I read into that a little bit. What were they saying? Was there a line that alluded to him maybe being gay, actually? Or did I just read into that?
I wonder. Oh, she called him a male feminist. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember one.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, I had a feeling that she dated a gay guy in college. Maybe not. You know, a guy that wasn't out, you know.
Right.
People go through this situation.
I would say at Oberlin, there's probably less closeted. It's a very accepting community.
You can be, yeah.
Yeah. If you can be anywhere at a college, I would say Oberlin.
About her being open about sex, at one point I was like, is she really open about sex, or is it because it's something we don't talk about? Is it a kind of a contrarian, like if we were open and talked about sex, would she probably be talking about something else that we weren't open about?
Oh, you know? I see.
And I think that's maybe an artist's mindset too. It's like, what are the things that are being hidden and bringing those to light? So maybe give us some credit for that.
Yeah, definitely. And it wasn't like she was portraying herself in a great light when it comes to that.
Yeah. I wrote about this. This is also as much as, you know, it's about her and the Upper East Side people, rich people. Also a very strong millennial theme here. And I was like, well, it seems like from watching this, a millennial problem. It's like she can never state exactly what she wants. But she wants certain things to happen. Like when she's talking to the guys, it's like she wants to go out with them and date them, but she can never say that. So she can like flirt to a point, and they can flirt to a point. But it's always like hanging in dead air. It's like, what do we do next? Or are we... Nobody actually says like, hey, I want to take you out. Hey, I want, you know, this is what I want. Even in any part of her life, she can never state what she wants. But she's not inert. She's not completely nonchalant. She's doing things. She's going out. She's meeting people. She takes the job, you know, but she expects something to happen from that.
Right. She invites a guy to stay with her. Yeah.
That was a thing I was thinking about, was she's active but not in any direction. There's just too much happening that she's active in but never committing to, like even the moving in with her friend who was moving into town, like the friend that she spoke to over the phone the beginning of the movie. She's excited to move in. Like, oh, yeah, we're going to make plans. We figured out the place, everything else. Yeah. And then towards the end of the movie, that friend comes over after not having heard from her, from Lena's character at all. And it's like, what's going on? And Lena's just like, you know, I got to stay home. She makes an excuse and basically says she's not going to move in with her.
Right.
Yeah, she makes up this thing that her mom really needs her, which is not... the experience.
Not true at all. Not true. It's almost the opposite.
That's
what it is. That's a great way of describing it, and it's like she's not inert.
I called it the 3 yards in a cloud of dust lifestyle. She's like an old football team that's just like pounding the ball, give it to the running back every time. You just get a little bit ahead and then you gotta start and reset, and then you run it again. It's like, you got to get some new plays and patterns. You got to start launching the ball. At some point, you got to throw the Hail Mary out there.
Right.
No punts on fourth down. Let's go. We got to pick up the intensity. Dealing with the artist guy. What kind of artist was he?
No idea.
Which one? The guy who made the videos?
Yeah, who made the videos. And she just let him stay at the house, sleep in the mom's bed and stuff.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That was shit. I was just like, oh my God.
It threw me so off because having never seen the movie, I was like, okay, great. The mom made it clear her character cannot sleep in her bed without the mother's permission. And then when the mom goes on a trip and the artist guy that she picks up, some guy on the street, and just offers to let him stay at her place, he's sleeping in the mom's bed. And to me, I go, okay, this is going to lead to drama. This is going to lead to conflict. The mom's going to get involved and it's going to turn into a big fight. Okay, I'm leaning forward finally. Like, yes, it's about to go down. And nothing happens. The repercussions aren't there. She reads the mom's diaries with all this personal information. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, she's making YouTube videos, putting it out in the world, reading her mom's diary. Something's going to, there's got to be a repercussion. Mom's going to be pissed. Nothing happens.
Definitely no repercussion there. There was a little bit of a repercussion to the guy's thing over. Like, the mom was pissed about it. It wasn't explosive, but the mom was definitely like, he can't stay here. You got to,
But I like when the mom was like, and you're not having sex with him? And it was like,
that's weirder. Yeah.
Obviously, she wants to, but she can't do that thing, but she can break all these other rules. Mm-hmm. You're the wrong kind of rebel.
Yeah. She's rebelling against the thing that's supporting her.
But when the mom said, there were a couple lines that were good. I think it was maybe the friend said, our people are assholes. Like, your college friends weren't assholes.
Right.
Our people are assholes. I was like, nice. And there was another line the mom said. Well, one time when they were arguing, the mom, the sister, and her, and she was like, this is my house too. And I'm like, black family, they'd have been like, this is not your house. Not your house. You ain't paid no bills. Yeah. Talking about your house. Yeah. You know,
it's like a Huxtable line.
100%, Theo. What? You know, this is not your house. But till the point when they were arguing that same argument, I kind of had her side in a sense of like, oh, you guys are like pushing her to the side in a way, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that she wasn't annoying, but I could see why she would lash out, you know?
Yeah.
I do feel like this movie speaks not just to people in Upper West Side New York or that in like Calabasas or some other rich community. I think wherever there are like upper class, upper middle class, suburban white families, that those sons and daughters are relating to a movie like this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot about it that they're like, even if they're in, you know, I don't know, Missouri or Florida or something, I think that's the audience. You know, it's a
that's interesting.
White, high, you know, upper economic class audience.
I would say, like, the mother, I don't think is a traditional or stereotypical upper middle class or, like, upper class white mom. Like, she's so detached. Like, she's an artist, right? Like, that is her
artist.
Number one identity is, like, her work.
Yeah.
Where she gives her character, her daughter, a lot of freedom, right? Like, really, the only things... The only rules were about what would affect her directly. Like, don't sleep in my bed. Don't drink my wine.
Right.
But other than that, there was no like curfew. There was no, not that you necessarily would with someone who's 22, but she was never keeping tabs on her.
Right.
Daughter was just off doing her own thing. And even like we were saying before, like the reaction to her reading the journals, even the reaction to the sex, where she's like, where'd you have sex? Oh, you had sex there. And she's like, do you wear a condom? Oh, I really wish you'd wear like, mm-hmm. I don't think is the norm, right. The average, like upper middle class white kids, mom's reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
True. And I kind of liked it, but it was definitely not relatable.
No, I thought it was interesting for sure. Yeah.
And as annoying as any of the girls were, like we touched on the guys were just worse.
The chef, the absolute worst. But yeah, both of them.
They're bad. And like the film guy, he's like so above anything. I got to do these weird, I'm in a cowboy hat, doing these weird videos. It's like, man, if you're so above everything, just go live in the woods, man. Just, you know.
And he's always complaining.
Always.
Like, why she's putting him up, and he's like, "Oh, this bed is to this. This bed is to that."
And he's eating all the food. Oh, geez, man.
Yeah, drinking all the wine,
and he's got development meetings with HBO during the day.
Yeah, he's about to get a show. My God. That's really what I got. I did, you know, at times mm-hmm. when she fought with her sister at the party, I was like, oh my God, these people have no real problems. I was like, man, kind of mad for watching the movie, but it wasn't that big a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that fight was like the most exciting thing. Other than the sex inside of that steel beam or whatever, that fight was like the more exciting. Like, finally, something's happening. Like, again, no consequences. The fight's over by the end.
Well, commentary on their lives, right? That they can live with no consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it plays into the metaphor at the end where it's like, well, they know they got to wake up eventually, but maybe not. They could just keep pushing it further and further away. Like, put the alarm in the other room so we don't hear it. Hmm. It's like, you're supposed to hear the alarm.
Exactly. Amon is pissed. That's the point of the alarm, man. What are you talking about?
That's the whole point of an alarm. Yeah, no. Yeah. I might sound pissed, but I actually liked it. I enjoyed watching it. It was a peek into another world. It was exciting. And
It has a calming, it's almost like ASMR. It has a calming effect.
Mm-hmm.
The tone of the movie. Nothing's really jarring. Nothing's really like, you know, outlandish in a way where it's kind of like wake you up. It's like it can kind of just lull you. It hypnotizes you.
Yeah.
It's also something where I keep thinking about Girls coming after this and the backlash people had for Girls and Lena Dunham's Privilege. But it's also something where it's like, well, look at all the other shows, television shows being made. It's like, would you have rather HBO greenlit some like 60-year-old white guy's pilot? Because like those are all the other ones. It's like they, to a certain extent, made sort of a creative leap by being like, let's give a show to a 24-year-old mm-hmm. writer director who doesn't look like a traditional Hollywood, you know, body.
Right, and let her. And it's start
like that's interesting. Yeah, let's have this like auteur make a TV show mm-hmm. is not the safest, most boring choice.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
I mean, there's definitely some truth there, but it was also kind of like the new millennial Girls in a sense, or like an answer to Sex and the City, I mean.
Yep.
And it had all those comparisons. I mean, they planned it out. You know, HBO, they're smart.
Sure, yeah.
Well, we got this girl. We had, you know, Sex and the City was older women at a different time. What's the world look like now? I don't know. Like I said, I think Lena's just a very, what's it called? Polarizing or conflicting person and personality. Where it's like, there are things that you can definitely respect her for.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that could be frustrating to you, especially if you're underrepresented and you're like, well, man, she lived in privilege, no consequences. And now she's like on top of the world with a show. If it seems like the rich get richer. And I think that's can be really frustrating.
Right. Right.
To constantly see, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I would just say she's not the only example of it. Like every show is that. Every show is the rich getting richer.
Yeah.
That's so true. And it doesn't, the other potentially frustrating thing is like, it doesn't follow the rules of what we all agreed on. Like there's no, even the show Girls, I looked it up. The amount of viewers is minuscule compared to any show. It's like 200,000 to 400,000 viewers, like weekly viewers. And that's breaking the rule of like, okay, we'll keep it on if it's good, meaning people like it and keep watching it. And it's, and you go, okay, well, why can't others be afforded this opportunity?
Right. It got so much media coverage.
Yes.
For the size of its audience. Yeah, for sure.
But it was interesting. I watched a lot of it. You know, you guys got any other thoughts about the movie? I think we kind of covered stuff. It's, you know, a decent mumblecore movie. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, it could make you mad. It could hypnotize you to sleep.
Yeah.
You also, there's some decent storytelling, some good camera work. Like when they finish the argument and all her classmates are just watching them, they pan over. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even the idea to shoot that sex scene through the pipe was like, mm-hmm. yeah, that's yeah. not really not on film. That was really, really smart, really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really well done.
Yeah.
Would I recommend it just like to any black person? Not likely, unless they was like, I'm looking for something like, you know, unless I knew that they really like mumblecore or like alt comedy, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'd probably recommend girls over this. To be like, hey, if you want that,
watch. Yeah, I would almost say the same thing of like, watch the pilot of Girls. If mm-hmm. you like it, if you like watching the pilot, that show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if you like this show, go back and watch Tiny Furniture.
Yeah. I think most people saw the show before going back to right. the movie.
I was telling Aman before we started, I only heard about Tiny Furniture after Girls was out, where people were like, you know, she's got this film before this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I never saw it, not till we watched it for the pod.
Yeah.
Let's get into casting.
All right.
Let's do
So here, what I was going to say before is I feel like the most authentic, sort of accurate casting would be impossible because it would be finding like a 22-year-old mm-hmm. like black writer director who's going to star in it and herself and cast her family and like actor friends.
Of course.
So it's like no one knew any of these people before this movie came out.
Yeah, this is fantastical. Pick people you know and like reimagine. It has to be.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Totally.
I'll go first this time.
Great.
Okay.
Cass for Lena Dunham, Aura? I can't really say it. But yeah, Aura, her character. Yeah. I went with Sam J. You know Sam J, the comedian?
Yeah, Sam J.
Writes on SNL. She has a show on HBO, like a talk show kinda, but it's like kinda like The Shop, but it's a little more going on. Mm-hmm. And also on Bust Down on Peacock.
Oh, yes.
Cool. And I was like, Sam J is really funny. You know, that's where I went, Sam J.
Cool.
That's fun. Yeah, should I
go for it
next?
Go ahead.
Okay, cool. So for the Aura character, I went with Ayo Edebiri.
That's who I went with.
Did you really?
Ayo Edebiri?
From the Bay.
Yeah. I went with her. I was like, yeah, she's like unique and has her own little point of view. It could be a similar.
She's super dope.
She's dope. So it'd be kind of cool.
I like it. Yeah, pretty young. Seems like, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the same mm-hmm. casting, same idea.
Okay, we might have the same cast.
That would be never been done.
All right, let's see.
Who do you want to do next? Let's do the mom.
Yeah, that's what I went with.
Okay,
next.
Cool.
I went with Tracee Ellis Ross.
Mm. Oh, okay.
She's tall.
Like she could play like the, she could play the tenderness and definitely the eccentricity
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. of them all.
Yeah,
Tracee Ellis Ross.
That's good. I had thought of her.
Yeah, I like that.
You got them all.
I went with Lisa Bonet.
Ooh, definitely seems artistic,
artsy. Nice. She could play that. You know,
trying to a much sexier mom.
Yes,
it changes
yes.
the story a little bit. That's your mom,
right?
Mom's already
hot. When the guy who's living there comes in and meets her, it's like, whoa, wait a second.
Yeah, then it's like, mom? Okay, cool, dope.
I mean, wow. That's Tracee Ross too. She came and saw.
Yeah, yeah.
Who you got?
I got Regina King.
Mm-hmm.
Just like who's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Of course.
Or let's do Charlotte, the other friend, Jemima's character.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
A wild friend. I went with Meg Thee Stallion.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Let's go.
She hasn't acted yet, right, that we know of? Just music videos?
Yeah, she did the part on the show. Oh, my God. I can't remember the name. P-Valley, the show about...
Oh, I gotta watch that show.
Uh-huh.
She played herself, too, so it's like, huh. But
cool. She's in She-Hulk.
And she's supposed to be in She-Hulk, coming up.
She's supposed to be in She-Hulk coming up.
She's blowing up.
That's pretty dope.
Who you got?
Yeah, for the friend character I went with, from Bodies, 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 one of the main characters, Amandla.
Oh my God! Steinberg. Two for two.
Yeah, nice.
Got a hole up my phone.
Oh, this is real.
I'll say this about casting for anybody listening and everybody. Like, when you do black casting, you do end up thinking about the same people. Mm-hmm. And also notice how often we have to go to like musicians and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But and those are also people that get big roles. It's like a stand up, a musician, somebody big in another field, even an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it's like the same pool, like especially when we do these movies with younger roles, it's like you only so many people that are known to you know that we can pick. So that's something that man, kind of sucks.
it's a problem.
But I will say, considering that, we rarely overlap.
We rarely overlap like this.
It's very true. It's very true. So it's crazy.
We've had Amandla. Mm-hmm. She's great. She's great. What about the sister?
Nadine. So for Nadine, go ahead.
I went with Lizzo.
Another musician.
Wow.
A lot of musicians. Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, I juggled these roles. So, like, I had Megan as even the lead.
Yeah,
at
I could
one point.
See Lizzo as the lead, too. Yeah.
I had Liz as the friend or the college friend, but Lizzo as the sister. I like it.
Cool.
Yeah. Brandon, I have a feeling we're going to have the same person. You want to
do
it on the count of three?
Blow up. Okay.
The count of three?
All right. One, two, three. Storm Reed. Okay.
Damn.
I got Storm Reed from Euphoria, plays Zendaya's younger sister.
Nice.
Yeah. Storm, she's good. And then you went with Yara. Yeah, of course.
Uh-huh. Yara. I could see her being like the excelling younger sister.
Okay, so did you guys do others? I did.
I did the two guys.
I did the two guys too.
I did the college friend too. Did you guys?
Oh,
do
I didn't do that.
Yeah, I did
friend.
The college friend. Yeah.
We'll do that first, and that'll be all the women. Cool. We'll do the two guys. I went with AO here as a college friend.
Oh, okay. I was thinking about that too.
But it's definitely a smaller role, but that's what I went with. That's a college friend.
She could so do it. Yeah. I went with Kersey Clemons.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I feel like I haven't seen her in a minute, but I'm sure she's been in stuff.
Right?
She's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's been good. She was on that show Love, right? For a few episodes.
Yeah. She made that movie with Nick Offerman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Kersey Clemons, nice. Okay, and all of the guys.
So first, Jed, the Alex Kropaski, who goes on to do Girls.
Yeah.
The filmmaker.
The guys were hard, so I kind of just, first person came to mind. So for Jed, I went with Gerard Carmichael.
Oh, yeah, I thought about him, too.
Yeah.
He's got an indie feature out that I want to see, too. I can't remember the name.
Yeah.
But he, I think, wrote directed, right?
Yeah, on the count of three, I think it's called.
Yeah, I got to check that out. Who you got, Amon?
So I went with Taco from Odd Future, the dude who's in Dave, who plays the producer.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Taco Falls, the 7'6".
Which would have been really interesting.
Yeah, I like him too. Whoever's a Veil works. I'm going with that.
Yeah, we'll check the Veils.
Wait, what's he on?
He's on Dave. He was on Odd Future, the rap group, and then he's now an actor.
But he's
I
not
seen
Gator,
him act.
Gator's the only guy I know on Dave. The only black guy I know on Dave.
Yeah, he's the other black guy. The one.
I don't know who that is. I didn't do season two. Couldn't quite. Anyway.
All right. So for Jed, for the Alex Kropaski. I don't know if you know this guy, Langston Kerman. You know Langston Kerman?
Yeah. Okay, cool.
That's what I got.
Shout out Langston Kerman.
Yeah, he's great.
Because for the chef, I picked Langston Kerman.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Almost matched up.
Almost.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Who'd you get for the chef, Amon?
For the chef, I went with Gata from Dave.
There you go.
I was like, I want to hear him say those lines, like, whatever.
They can commute together from the set of Dave.
Yeah, truly.
I don't know how to pronounce his name. He's from Insecure. Is it Wylan Noel? Is that his name? He plays like the guy Issa sleeps with in the first or second season.
Oh, Yolan. I don't know how to say it either. Yolan? Yolan?
Yolan? Is it Yolan?
Why?
Yeah, Y apostrophe L-A-N.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I've never known really how to say his name. Yolan Noel.
Yolan Noel sounds better than Wylan, which is what I had first said.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, good. Great. Yeah.
That's a great cast. I'm telling you, when I reimagined this, I was like, oh man, this movie would be great with the all black cast.
It'd be very interesting if they changed nothing about this script.
Totally. Oh, I would love to do that as a project.
Well, this was a fun one.
Yeah.
Let the record show this was Amon's pick.
Yep.
We typically do consensus, but we were like, let's kind of round robin it. And I was like, Tiny Furniture, gotta see it.
Yeah.
Double one thing feature, we didn't do 2. At the beginning of this one is how white is this movie?
How white is this?
Yeah.
Movie? Well, we kind of talked about it being for rich.
Yeah. I guess we did.
Whites, but
yeah.
You have something to add?
Just that, like, if someone was to ask me, like, to name a white movie, this is one that I think I could confidently say.
Yeah. This should roll off anybody's tongue if they're like, name a white movie. And I'm like, some Wes Anderson, you know, we did a movie of his, you might say. And this, but add Tiny Furniture to that list is like a roll off the tongue white movie.
Truly. 100%. And it's a very specific, it's not just rich white. This is like rich Manhattan white.
Rich Tribeca.
That's who it's for. When I told people we were watching this movie, they were like, oh man, okay.
a rich liberal white kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes.
But glad we watched it. Got out of the way. She's got a movie out now. We might as well go ahead and say she's got a movie out now called
Sharp Stick, I think, or something like that.
Sharp Stick.
Oh, really?
And also, I just think following T2 with Tiny Furniture is just hilarious.
Hilarious, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a double feature that would have the theaters burning down.
You'd have to do Tiny Furniture first.
Yeah.
Nobody's staying for that movie. Yeah. T2 is just a showstopper. Great. Good app.
Yeah, that was fun.
Till next time.